All right, so now you were living in Oakland as a married man with a child. What was your social life
Well,
like then?
it was very, very active, but it was with the friends. We had young married friends, unmarried friends, and we were doing things all the time, and they were visiting back and forth, and they were coming to our house and all that sort of stuff. So it was quite active. But it wasn't associated with organizations. It was non-organizational
Oh, I
life.
see. What about your religious life then? Were you, did you?
It was practically nil. I didn't participate. I had no religious affiliations.
So this was your professional life as a married man, and what do I have here? Did you, as you just told me, you didn't get involved with volunteer work or
No.
anything in the community at that
Well,
time.
for 4 years I went to college. I went to school at night.
Oh.
Then we had the kid. My wife was had a very difficult time. She was ill for many years, so it tied me up completely.
What about the situation in Oakland then? Was there any anti-Semitism or anything
Well,
on the radio that you recall in those days?
it's all blurred. I suppose there was. I don't remember when Father Coughlin or that
That's
sort of
what I
thing.
meant.
Yeah, but one was not very happy with it, or the word, the news from Europe or that
But you
sort
did not feel any impact where you worked and as you
of
lived.
thing. No.
That's a
I
question.
worked with some very nice
Yeah.
people. I was given, I was treated like a, gentleman.
Really?
Oh, yes. There was a very cosmopolitan group at the Bureau. The group I worked for, the boss was an Englishman. My immediate senior associate was from the state of Washington. My next associate was a Bostonian of French-Canadian extraction, who was an iconoclast. There was another guy who was more, square, more waspish, but he was also very nice. They had us to dinner, at their houses, and they did all that one could expect under the circumstances. And we were treated very, very nicely.
When did you get any promotions?
Well, that's
Well,
good.
they, well, first of all, the year after I got married, I got raised to the junior scientist, the junior scientific corollary, where I should have been hired in the first place. And this was prompted by the fact that they'd hired another fellow at the higher grade, and so they had to even things out. And they did that. And he became, he was a Jewish fellow by the name of David Bosley. And he became friendly with the Bosleys, and they were part
What's
of
their
our search.
names?
Bosley, David Bosley.
BUS.
Slik. He's still alive today. He lives in Youngstown,
Was
very
this
ill.
a federal level,
Oh
this
yes, it was
Bureau
the
of
Bureau of
Mines?
Mines. It was part of the Department of the Interior.
I see.
And we just did our thing,
Yeah.
and it was very low budget, but very active, and I don't know how much direction we got from Washington. The head of the branch in Washington was a very, very well-known man, very solid, a man named R.O.C. Fielding. And didn't get into, I wasn't in the, there was a big project on synthetic liquid fuels at the Bureau at that time. The first oil scare, or the second or the third. Bert Landy used to tell how he was hired on the first one.
The first what?
First oil scare. Are we going to
Oh, the
run out of
scare,
oil?
yes.
And he went to work for the Bureau in Rifle, Colorado, working on oil shale. And of course, in a couple of years, they closed that up and he transferred to Pittsburgh. He got a job here.
So,
Anyhow.
wait a minute, there was on gasification or liquid fuel?
Oh, no, liquid fuel.
On liquid fuel.
Well, they It was liquid fuel, but they tried different avenues, etc. And my roommate and my closest friend was on that project. And other people that were on that project I got to know very well, and they remained friends, etc.
Were you on the liquid fuel program?
No, I was in the combustion section. Oh. This was the conventional side. Yeah.
Well, the results of your experiments there, were they used by the coal companies in the surrounding area?
No, the coal companies, not so much. We didn't, although some work in the laboratory was centered on coal sampling, which doesn't sound like very much of a problem, but it is it's a very serious technical problem. How do you know what you're getting when you buy coal? I mean, for utility, it buys thousands of tons.
Right.
And the whole trick of the whole question of how you sample it. I was not assigned to that, Buzlik was, and I only operated on that peripherally. Mm-hmm. But we, the Bureau, my boss, struck up a deal with the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, and we did cooperative programs. The Bureau participated mm-hmm. by supplying manpower and skills for test work. And these were test work on boilers and utility plants. And so I traveled a good bit and designed equipment for the tests and traveled a great deal on performing these tests. So you travel to Ohio, to West Virginia, to Louisiana, you know, places like that, doing these tests.
The political situation in that in those years that you were...
Well...
Do you remember much about what was going on?
We were observers, and, we're both raised in the Democrat Party tradition. So I guess we voted Democrat. We weren't too particularly active. We weren't active politically. Mm-hmm. And almost... Looking at it from an outsider's point of view, because we weren't native Pittsburghers, maybe we weren't. As I say, we didn't know, outside of our small circle of friends, we didn't know the figures of the people in town, because we weren't raised here.
Well, was Oakland considered a Jewish suburb of any kind, or was it just
I really don't know. It was associated with the university. There were the Jewish population, and... I say we didn't have a major religious affiliation, and we had our circle of friends, and we were busy, so we were insulated from a lot of that stuff.
Do you recall any life on your vacations, if you had them? Where did you go?
Well, I'm just trying to think. Well, we were restricted. And travel. Well, before our son was born, we went on vacations. We would go back to New York a lot. And, take tours, automobile tours. We got a little car.
You had a car?
Well, we bought a little. It was a Bureau of Mines cast off. They sold it, at a sale. And we fixed it up. It wasn't very reliable. We had a lot of trouble with it.
What year?
I'm trying to think. It was 37. 38, rather. And then we got a more reliable car. Mm. And, I got to answer that.
Okay. All right. Now, we were talking about vacations, right?
Yeah. Well, we used to travel. We took a trip down to the Smokies when it first opened in 38 or 39. And then we had a cottage up in Michigan that same summer for a year, for a week or so. We traveled with friends of ours. From Oakland. Mm-hmm. And Joseph Schwartz was an attorney.
You got a cottage in Michigan?
Yeah, in Michigan, yes. Which we rented from a guy in Chicago we never saw. It was through some recommendation. Uh-huh. But it was very, very nice.
Where in Michigan, remember?
And it was called a place called Cub Lake.
Cub Lake?
Yeah. I don't know if you know where... Kalkaska and Grayling are in Michigan Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, it's... Now that was... You could see the difference between the urban situation and the suburban situation. There was nothing there. Absolutely nothing. And the people there were really off the terrace.
You mean no industry?
No, well, the distance between Kalkaska and Grayling is over 40 miles. You could drive the 40 miles and never see a person, never see a vehicle. I mean, that's how dead things were.
Yeah.
And they used to have Saturday nights in Kalkaska. They'd hang a screen on the city, on the town water tower, and show movies. And the ladies ate, I guess, would sell popcorn. Mm-hmm. And that was the big excitement.
The big excitement.
And the Indians would come in from the reservation.
Ah. Well, that's a real vacation then. Change of scenery.
Then we went to the World's Fair with the same friends. Uh-huh. And stuff like that. And that was before us.
Do you recall at that period, was it smoky in Pittsburgh? Oh. Was it dark?
It was pretty bad. I'd walk down 4th Street when I was going to work in the morning. This is the first year I was here, say, 36, 37, on a wet fall morning, and the tar would come out of the chimneys, you know, and turn around and come right down on the street. You know. Uh-huh. People burned soft coal. Yeah. It was pretty deadly. It was full of it. But that was, you know,
long time ago.
Yeah, and
so you feel they did the right thing. They prohibit now, don't they?
Oh yeah, burning they did this after the war. Yeah,
in your furnace.
Yeah, they did this after the war. Uh-huh. Yeah, you either had to have a stoker or burn,
right?
So-called smokeless fuel.
And as a result, what would you say about the city today in comparison?
Well, and the city is far cleaner, of course, but the automobile is made up for the coal,
uh-huh.
And the automobile is one of the major sources of pollution, and industry some.
So now all those mills that used to be along the rim of Oakland are gone, is it?
Yeah, well, they used to spew out mostly iron oxide. You could see iron oxide from the open hearts in Oakland, you know, just going over the, blowing up towards Squirrel Hill.
Yeah, but it was worse in Oakland, wasn't it?
No.
The dust.
No, actually depending on the prevailing winds. The plants, Oakland was not necessarily in the blast furnaces. For Oakland were on the edge, you know what I mean? You know where they are, right where the parkway bends, come hits the river. And so and if the winds were upriver, they didn't get much of that. And the same thing with the plants on the south side, the prevailing winds were upriver, so
it's
right past. Oakland wasn't too bad.
Good. So we're supposed to talk a little about the neighborhood, and I think you just covered that. And
well, we had neighbors, and we didn't interact with with many of the neighbors, except those in the, there were two little buildings side by side. We knew some of the people in there. Mm-hmm. That's about all.
We went over the organizations. You can't remember any particularly that you belonged to.
Not at that time. They're not worth, except the professional ones.
We didn't discuss Prohibition. You lived through that period.
Well, Prohibition ended while I was still at college.
Oh.
And I remember the first day you could go and drink beer when we all ran out, you know, in the afternoon to get a real beer. But it was not a very significant factor in our lives. No, I mean, we weren't the drinking kind.
True. What about the wars? Do you have memories of World War One? How it affected you, your family?
Well, my brother, oldest brother, was drafted, and he lost his the leg in the war, not in combat, but in the training accident, and he became a professional veteran. He never worked in his life.
Oh.
And my next oldest brother was in the naval militia. It was a part-time thing. He wasn't actually drafted. And I remember I inherited his watch cap and peacoat, which I wore for a number of years.
In what kind of militia? Naval?
Naval militia in New York. They had a thing like that. My older sister married a man who was, at that time, was a chief petty officer in the Navy, stationed at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. Now, his father was a ship's tailor. In other words, sold uniforms and that sort of stuff. Had been in business at the Brooklyn Navy Yard for many, many years. So
we were talking, I'm introducing this again. We were talking about World War One.
Yeah. And I remember, they tell me I used to get up on a chair and give speeches about the war.
Oh, really?
As a kid. I have no recollection of it. But anyhow, the next war, of course, my brother was drafted.
World War II?
Yes, my next oldest
against
brother.
Against Hitler.
Yeah.
This other war, we have to clarify, was the war to make
the world safer than ours.
Yeah, that's all.
Anyhow, my brother was drafted, and I was not. I was...
Which brother?
Brother High.
Yeah,
He was the in the right age. And Howard, of course, was born before Pearl Harbor. And, in October. And so I was never drafted. And I was deferred all through the
year. How old must you have been then?
Well, I was in 41. I was 29.
Uh-huh. Living in?
At that time, we were living at 234 Oakland Avenue. Mm-hmm.
But you were a married man with
a child.
A child, so they weren't up to that yet.
Well, they never did get up to me.
I see.
And I don't know whether I got deferments from my job or what have you.
But you were never drafted.
I was never drafted.
So you missed that war.
Yeah. Well, I was assigned to Washington for 6 months to work on a project.
Oh.
It was a fuel economy project.
Yes.
Which was pretty rough, because Washington was a miserable place. It was crowded,
And I
couldn't find a place to live.
Rents were high.
Well, I never could move my family there. They lived elsewhere.
What did you work up in Washington? What did you do?
Interior Department building on 8th Street.
Hmm.
What did you do?
Well, I worked on the fuel economy project.
Okay.
The Bureau organized. It's going to save fuel for the war.
Did we have any, did this country have any problems with oil during that World War II?
Of course. But you got to remember that we didn't depend very much on foreign oil at the time. We had very large domestic production.
Yes.
And the major consumption of gasoline was for the automobile even then. And so you cut that out and, we rationed gasoline. We put up our car on blocks, I had moved, when did we move? In 42, we moved to Beeler Street, 5331 Beeler.
And what year?
42.
42.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a nice street. It still is, isn't it?
It's a mixture. It's a funny mixture. Yeah.
Depends which part of Beeler.
There's some old houses on it, some new. We're above the bend.
Yeah.
So there are some old traps there.
What was the address on Beeler?
5331 Wheeler Street.
What happened? Where were you during the Korean War, and did it affect you?
Korean War. When was the Korean War?
Good question.
About 50 to 54 or something.
Oh, I was working for Westinghouse by that time.
Oh.
I was,
When did you switch?
I worked in the Bureau of Mines until 49. Meanwhile, I'd been living on Beeler Street. And in 49, I decided to get out of the Bureau because avenues of promotion apparently were not available. It didn't seem like a blind alley. So I went to work for Westinghouse on the Naval Reactors Program.
Wow, and that's where you met some cohorts.
Like whom?
Like
that's where I met Shapiro, yeah.
Yeah, would you mention their names?
Well, Zalman Shapiro is the one the best.
Yes.
Went to work.
And Freddie Forshaw later.
Wait a minute, at Westinghouse.
Yes.
At Westinghouse where?
Bettisfield.
Okay.
That's where the scientists worked. Where was that located?
Bettisfield is
near the...
Just over to Roseburg.
Near airport, isn't it?
Well, it's some distance from the airport. It's an old airport. It was the first airport.
Not our present
day. Yeah, no, near County Airport.
So there were a group of Jewish scientists working at Westinghouse at that period.
Well, they were hired. There weren't too many in the corporation prior to that, but many of them were hired at that time.
Were you on the...
Wait a minute. There were some others. You mentioned Zal.
Well, Sid Krasick, if you know him.
I knew him. K-R-A-S-S-I.
No, one S.
I-K. Krasick. Who else? He was the brain.
Well, he was a physicist.
Hmm?
He was a physicist.
Yeah, physicist. Yeah, he was very important, wasn't he, to the...
Yes, he was a major figure. It turned out to be. Hmm. What happened is the man who was heading up the physics work didn't stay. He took off for the West Coast in about 6 months or a year. Sid became the senior physicist on the site.
And you have Dr. Forshaw?
Forshaw didn't come until later.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Lustman, if you know Ben.
Ben Lustman?
Yeah.
Wasn't he the guy in charge for the clad?
Well, he was a metallurgist. He was out of metallurgy.
Metallurgist. Did he get the credit for, or was he the right one for the zircaloy?
Well, he was. He did a lot of work on zircaloy, but there are a lot of different things.
What was zircaloy for
them? Very important.
Well, zircaloy.
Would you like to describe it?
Well, it's an alloy. If you want to put reactors together and make them work, there is one attribute that was not previously of any significance industrially, and that is the tendency of the metal to capture neutrons. I don't want to get into neutrons, etc.
But somebody's going to want that information.
Yeah, but in any event,
it's so important, which is why I asked about it.
Yeah, but the point is that this alloy was discovered, this material, its property, was discovered adventitiously and made possible the whole technology. And there was a tremendous program, enormous effort to make it in the first place, manufacture it, shape it, and utilize it. And people like Lustman and Shapiro were involved in this very great level. It's amusing. Don't ever quote me to Zalman, but neither his nor Lustman's efforts to make zirconium. You have to make it in size, sufficient. Laboratory pieces didn't do any good. You had to have big
lots of it, sure.
And they were pursuing various methods of making it, etc. But a parallel effort to do this was ultimately prevailed and then provide the basis for
it. Where was that done? Do you remember?
Well, part of it was done at Bettis, and part of it was done by another guy, and part of it was done by other people in different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, it was a very, very tricky material, and not reproducible, and all sorts of arguments between people on what was right, what was wrong, etc. And these got improved by the discovery of that small quantities of other materials in alloy with the zirconium improved the properties, and that's why the zircaloy is a name for the alloy.
What period was it that Westinghouse got involved with the nuclear submarine?
Well, that was it. They
was
took
that
the,
part of it?
They took the project in 1948. I joined in 1949. Uh-huh. But it hadn't really expanded until about the period when I joined, which was in December 1949. My badge number was 100, and it went up to 5,000. So
wow.
You can imagine how the big operation
was. Did you ever meet Admiral Rickover?
Yeah, sure. But I wasn't in direct contact and opposition with him. But occasionally I'd see him at a meeting.
He'd come to supervise, is that
right?
And were you there during the period of these people thinking about Numac opening this company?
Well, Salman got into that. I guess he got tired of, the way the structure and the opportunity still left for him. And so he organized the company. I don't remember what year that was. Mm-hmm. But he's an entrepreneurial type, so yeah. That's what he did.
Anything else you'd like to say about Westinghouse and their attitude? Did they seem more open to hiring Jews?
Well, at that time, it was any warm body, for God's sake, that could approximately do the work was hired. I was responsible for hiring the first Negro scientist in the Westinghouse Electric Corporation.
Who?
Probably the name of Bob Lloyd.
L-L-O-Y-D.
And they were Southerners, people with Southern backgrounds and, cultural prejudices against Negroes. You have to understand that there are different levels of that. That these were not...
racist.
They weren't really racist. They were cultural. In other words, you just didn't, blacks just didn't do this, you know what I mean? And you didn't hire blacks, etc.
Yeah.
But there wasn't no feeling of animosity about it. But I give it to the credit of the then director of the laboratory. I had strung him out.
Who was he?
Well, you shouldn't have asked me that.
Okay.
I was going to tell you before you asked me. Now I don't forget. I forgot.
I know how that works.
Well, anyhow, I remember standing on the cafeteria line, and I happened to get the two of them together. We had this application, this thing in process, and they were dragging it out. And so I happened to get the two people involved, my boss and his boss, on the line together. So I put it to him again, and my boss said, "Was this from South Carolina yet?" Well, we can't do things the old way anymore. Hire a guy.
I see. So you made the breakthrough.
Well, I wasn't attempting to. He was just—he'd impressed us very much. He'd been interviewed by Monty Schultz. Did you?
Sure.
You know Monty Schultz.
Sure, I know.
And it was very, very impressive, and he ended up with a very, very fine career at Westinghouse.
This black man.
Yeah, Bob Lloyd.
I think that's interesting.
Where was he from?
Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Area.
Mm-hmm. Well.
S-H-U-L-T-Z.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Before we continue, is there anything else you would like to say about your employ at Westinghouse? How long did it last?
Oh, I stayed there. I stayed at the Bettis Laboratories for 10 years, and then I transferred to the then Commercial Atomic, and I finished my career at Westinghouse.
Mm-hmm.
I retired from Westinghouse.
Mm-hmm. For 10 years, till when?
From 49 to 59.
49
to 59. Well, it's difficult to convey to non-technical people the tenor of those times.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you did was new at a absolute, everything was done at a gallop, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I handled large sums of money and directed large numbers of people and all that sort of stuff and traveled all over the place and doing that.
What was your title?
Oh, I had various titles. I ended up as a section manager, and then when I was transferred, I had the title of Manager of Chemical Development. That is when I went to the commercial one. And I was an executive.
Yes. Were the wages acceptable?
Oh, yes. I set my own when I first went to work. And in retrospect, I probably didn't ask for enough money. But that's another.
Commercial Westinghouse.
No.
Which was called, I need that name.
Oh, at that time.
Wapid, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. What's the atomic power department?
Yeah. Westinghouse Atomic
Power Department.
Power.
Well, the previously had been called WCAP, Westinghouse Commercial Atomic Power.
Mm-hmm. Or WCAP. Commercial.
Oh. Was that facility out on Ardmore Boulevard?
Well, that's where they ultimately became located. There were various spots. It started out in the storefront, you know, just a couple of guys in an office.
Those were great times. You people were pioneering.
Yeah, well, I had to address in my field many of the basic questions and solve them. Or at least determine the directions in which they would take for many, many, many years, or even up to now. And so it was a very exciting time.
Well, what about today? Do you think Westinghouse, or let me put it this way, how is Westinghouse today in that field? Or have they relinquished it to other people?
First of all, the commercial nuclear business is on its uppers, and that there are no new plants being built. They're getting by on service work, replacements, and what have you. Mm-hmm. They're doing all the peripheral jobs, and obviously there's an enormous amount of money being spent in the nuclear industry on peripheral work, you know, stuff that has to be done like inspection.